Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Dollapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you very much, Audrey. Welcome, folks, to Blog Talk Radio Network and the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm your host, Keith Haley. Audrey, I want to thank you and Emily and Mike for getting us on each week, and I know you'll have some part to play in the show here later on tonight. I want to thank Johnny Cash, of course, for singing that song that takes us to 90 different cities and states throughout the United States. One of these nights I'm going to have the two people in this world that have memorized the lyrics to that song who can sing it without reading it from a sheet. Anyway, we're set to go tonight with a very interesting show, and tonight's topic is going to be sex offenders, registrations, restrictions, obstacles, and fears. And we have two guests for you that have found out a lot about that subject and have experience working in that field, so it's going to be very interesting, and I'll give you their names and positions here in just a moment. If you're just tuning in for the first time, the purpose of our show is to discuss news, issues, and events and developments in this always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of a field we call criminal justice. The show is dedicated to the tireless police and courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. I hope you got a chance to hear the show last week with Gino Natalucci Persichetti. He was the 18-year head of the Ohio Department of Youth Services, and I thought he was just excellent, running through all the issues that have to do with the field of juvenile justice, and it's certainly a field that has both its accomplishments and its problems today. Now, let me mention something about Blog Talk Radio, as I do every week. This is indeed a leading-edge technology, and the chief executive officer of Blog Talk Radio is Alan Levy, and he has his own show, by the way, but months ago he started this venture and with just a few shows, and now there are probably 2,000 or 3,000 shows on Blog Talk Radio. Now, I want to mention to you what's possible in case you're interested in your organization or some interest group in starting a show yourself. It's a fascinating technology, but here's the deal. Any person, any interest group, and that can be from cigars to astronomy, can have their own show broadcasting live and streaming audio over the Internet, and it broadcasts worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners, and it's absolutely free. So can people think about what that actually means? I'm going to say it again just to be sure folks get it. You can broadcast your own show live and streaming audio over the Internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners, and it's absolutely free, and you can broadcast as many as 14 hours a week, and in fact, I keep saying I'm going to check that. It's probably more that you can do. When you look at that, the list of shows under probably two or three dozen different genres, you'll find out that there are shows. They're hosted by people who you will certainly know in the field of music, entertainment, literature, etc., and lots of shows on every topic imaginable. So take a look at it. So one of the things I'm fond of saying, if you don't like this show, switch over to something else or get one of your own, just like it says on the back of a Cheez-Its box, get your own show. Now, these shows are also archived immediately for replay or for download into a DVD or a CD or your own computer hard disk. And on the course website, the show that we broadcast is archived within about 5 to 10 minutes after the show is over. And then the last five shows on each show are listed on the Internet, and you can replay those until the next show comes up, and then they drop one. So five shows are actually archived. So watch our show website to see what's coming up in future shows. And each week we try to bring you something that no one else really does. We're not competing with anyone. We take an inside look at criminal justice practice and its professionals, and tonight would be a good example of that. What I'm going to do here, first of all, is kind of click on and see if I can get our two guests on tonight. I think they're both online at the moment. Let me go ahead and check, and we'll say that famous line we say on Blog Talk Radio a lot. Can you hear me? Hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Yes. Who is this?
Professor Haley. This is Kelly.
Oh, Kelly. Kelly Burden. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to try to get Christy on here with us in just a second. Can you hold on?
Absolutely.
Is this Christy? Hello, Christy?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Oh, this is just like military radio or something. We often say, how can you hear me? Or can you? And I think everybody can hear each other, so this is going to work out fine. I usually comment on a few news stories here in the beginning. I thought I'd bring you both on, and I'd let you make some commentary, too, if you like, and then we'll get into the depth of the program, which will be about the very interesting subjects that both of you have done research on and worked with currently. Tonight, our guests are Christine Lombardo. She's a researcher and a graduate student, and she's done a very interesting study and published that study on the subject of sex offender registration website sites in all 50 states and the National Registry. And we'll certainly let her talk a lot about what she found out. And our other guest tonight is Kelly Burden, and she's a case services coordinator at Northwest Community Corrections Center in Ohio. And Kelly is, of course, a case there, but she has experience in counseling with sex offenders. And Kelly, you also have a couple of other certifications. Why don't you tell folks about?
I am a licensed chemical dependency counselor, level 3. And that's it. I have my bachelor's degree. Right now I'm working on my master's at TIFIN.
Okay. We always like to have folks on the show that consider life as a challenge, and you've certainly taken on a very interesting couple of things.
Thank you.
And what will we do without you, that's for sure. So I thought I'd comment here just a moment. I don't know if any of you know another graduate from our program, but it's Paul Denton, and he's the newly appointed chief of police of Ohio State University, and he was actually on the show here probably a month and a half ago to talk about the subject of campus policing. And he has the distinction of being chief of police in the largest campus in the United States. Iowa State now has 52,000 students, and very interesting field to work in. But he sent me this here a couple of days ago, that they're now looking for campus police officers at Iowa State University, and they're looking for people in a couple of categories, or three categories. One's university law enforcement officer, and that's somebody that already has their officer certification, or you can just apply to be university law enforcement officer trainee, and there the applicant isn't certified, but Ohio State sends you to a police academy, and they pay for the training, of course, and you're paid while you're going to training. And they're also looking for a security officer. So if anybody is interested in that, they should contact Al Denton, chief of police at Ohio State University, and his phone number down there is 614-688-3742. And I wanted to mention to folks that are listening here maybe for the first time tonight, you can listen on your computer with Windows Media Player, or you can call in by phone and hear the whole show on your phone, as the three of us are doing right now. So you can call by cell phone, landline, or by Skype if you happen to have that service. And the call-in number is 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. And I can actually hold five calls at a time, and all five of us can talk to each other at the same time. So it's a very nice feature. Would you folks have time for a joke tonight?
Sure.
Okay. Audrey, my technical assistant and spiritual advisor for the show, Audrey is a blonde. I will point that out, but she loves blonde jokes, so each week, she finds a different blonde joke, and she's got one for us tonight. She thinks she really likes this one. Emily liked it too, so I'm going to go ahead and play it. Here goes.
Professor Haley, this is my blonde joke for the show tonight. I hope our listeners will like this one too. A blonde goes into a nearby store and asks a clerk if she can buy the TV in the corner. The clerk looks at her and says that he doesn't serve blondes, so she goes back home and dyes her hair black. The next day she returns to the store and asks the same thing, and again, the clerk said he doesn't serve blondes. Frustrated, the blonde goes home and dyes her hair yet again to a shade of red. Sure that the clerk would sell her the TV this time, she returns and asks a different clerk this time. To her astonishment, this clerk also says that she doesn't serve blondes. The blonde asks the clerk, how in the world do you know I'm a blonde? The clerk looks at her disgustedly and says, that's not a TV, it's a microwave. Emily.
Okay, Audrey, I like that one. I see Mike liked that one too. So we'll put that in the file up in the prime category. And we'll look forward to your joke next week. Let me talk a little bit about some things here generally in the news, perhaps a couple of stories, and then we'll get right to our guest tonight, because they have a lot of really interesting information to pass on to you, and I'm sure some of them would like to speak with you. You know how sometimes criminal justice agencies try to do their best, and darn it, it doesn't always turn out that way? Have you heard what happened to the police in Amsterdam, either of you?
No.
Okay, here's what they did. They're trying to accommodate the 1 million Muslims and that very small percentage of that group in Holland that end up in their jails and their prisons. So what they did in the Dutch police station is in the jail, trying to help the Muslims who are required to or do pray five times a day, and of course they must face the east when they do that. The police station painted on the top of the confinement cells and areas, arrows on the ceiling that pointed supposedly toward the east. Well, unfortunately, after about 2 months, someone pointed out to them that the arrows are 180 degrees out of phase, and they actually point to the west. The police chief apologized and said this was a tragic mistake for them, but a very stupid blunder, and they rectified the problem immediately. And then there are other detention facilities they've put the arrows up also, but they've made sure that they've had a good compass before they do any painting on the walls. But I thought that was interesting. No matter what you do, you can't get it. You can't get it right. I have to comment on this one too. Of course, everyone knows about the tragic event at Virginia Tech that occurred this Monday, and we've been inundated with information about that case. I mean, it's interesting from so many aspects and tragic in so many ways. And I was struck by the courageousness of both one of the professors and a couple of the students who helped save the lives of other people, and the young man that originally went to the first call when the first two were killed. But since I've been to Romania so many times, I wanted to comment on Professor Liviu Librescu, and he was killed as he blocked the classroom door from the gunman. So he's trying to get in, and he told his students to go out the back windows and drop down to the grass and escape. But many of those say that he was in fact, indeed, the person that allowed them to save their lives. And he's from Romania, and he's in while he was in Romania, he's an engineer, a structural, mechanical type of engineer, and he couldn't leave. He escaped the Holocaust. And in Romania, then in, he was also working there in Romania, and he's what you call a refusenik. And under their dictator, Ceausescu, Ceausescu would not let him leave the nation. He made him work for Romania in an engineering capacity, but he would not join the Communist Party, and that, hence the term refusenik. And so finally, he was able to leave Romania and went emigrated to Israel, and then from Israel to Virginia Tech, and he's been there, I think, since about 1987. And he's the most published scholar in the history of his Virginia Tech Technical University, which is kind of interesting. But what a way to go. And if there's ever a hero, I guess this is an example of one. And you don't see much occasion in town or in times where you see that happen on a university campus, and I hope we never see it again. We have another person online. Do you folks mind if I go ahead and get them online with us?
No, that's not at all.
Hello, who is this?
Hello, this is Sherry.
Sherry. All right, this is Sherry Warnock?
Yep.
Good. Thank you very much, Sherry, and we're glad you can join us tonight. I think you've done a little bit of writing about our subject tonight, if I'm not mistaken. Am I correct?
Well, yes, sir, just a little bit.
Okay, so we'll have you join Kelly and Christy, and I think it'll be a very interesting show. Let's go ahead and start, and I think what I'll do, if it's all right with you folks, is each one of you, I'll let you sort of talk about your paper for about 5 minutes, kind of the setup and generally what you find out. And I've got a million questions that'll take us about 5 hours. Unfortunately, we only have 1 hour. And tell us a little bit about what you found, and then you folks can converse a little bit, and we'll start interjecting some questions and see what we can find out. Christy, why don't you go ahead and tell us about your study of sex offender websites.
Okay, well, what I did was basically I spent weeks and weeks and weeks going through each and every state sex offender website, tooth and nail. I looked for what things they offered as far as tools for the community or what types of attributes they were searchable by, I guess in an attempt to see if there was some continuity among the states. And there are a lot of studies that look into the effects of sex offender registration and studies that compare methods of dissemination, but there were none that actually went through the contents of each, so that was what I did. And I did find that some states go above and beyond whatever general legislation there is. Some offer mapping systems, email systems, things like that, but unfortunately that's not all of them. There are several general attributes that are searchable on each state's website. Physical characteristics are searchable, race, hair color, even weight. Not many state sex offender registry websites utilize the mapping features. Mm-hmm. And there are generalities listed by each state when a query is conducted, and those vary also state to state.
And I will point out, you have, in fact, done the first study that's looked at all of them, correct?
I believe so.
Yeah, so that's certainly a distinction there. What was probably the oddest requirement that you saw on there or feature on there compared to all the other sites that have some of the general things that we might imagine? What did you find?
I don't know if it was the oddest, but it did kind of throw me off a bit. There are some states, and I'll have to look to see which state it actually was, but they provide not only the home address and workplace address of the registered offender, but also they are required to submit places that they frequent often. They had a certain restaurant they like to go to, or a coffee shop, or, you know, that's all broadcasted.
My gosh, I mean, how, I mean, if they're obligated to do that, I mean, how could they even, I mean, you go a lot of places, right? That sounds difficult to do.
I would think maybe they probably stay home a lot.
Right, that's probably the case. Well, Kelly, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you did. You did that's literally on the ground, and I think folks would be very interested in that, and then we'll get you folks converted together.
Okay. well, I focused my research on looking at the recidivism rate of sex offenders. I actually took the stance that the registration requirements and also the proximity laws, the colored license plates, all of those different things are actually do the opposite of what they were intended to do and increase recidivism. And I feel that's mainly due to the fact that they tend to, that those restrictions tend to isolate offenders, increase financial stress, emotional stress, cause problems with relationships, lead to relapse in alcohol and drugs, and consequently, these offenders then, you know, because they feel desperate or out of desperation, turn to committing further crimes. And that's not necessarily sex crimes, though. I think that there's a big...
We'll talk about it when I'm done here.
I think there's a big misconception that they, when they recidivate, they typically are not recommitting sex crimes. But I met with a group of 10. I conducted a focus group of 10 inmates at the facility that I work that all are required to register. And we discussed 10 major questions regarding their, basically focusing on their fears upon release, concerns about employment, housing, family issues. And, you know, they talked a lot about the fact that they felt like they were being treated, you know, like parasites. They felt, like I said, really hopeless and helpless. And, you know, I can't help but just wonder how we think that these, how we can think that these increased legislation that put all these obstacles in their way, how we think that that is going to help this issue.
What, for either one of you, but Kelly, perhaps first here, what fears should we have about these sex offenders that have been convicted and released? And Kelly, the ones that you spoke with, are all of those, can I assume, have been in prison or in custody?
Yes, yes, yeah. They all have been charged with felony level sex crimes. well, you know, honestly, and I'm trying to look here to find out what, you know, I think in general we have to remember that typically these offenses take place with the perpetrator knows the victim. In 80 to 90% of the case, that's how it goes.
So
people ordinarily do they? They think it's stranger.
Yeah.
Assault.
Yeah, and most of the legislation is geared towards that, you know, kind of stranger danger attitude. But the fears, I mean, honestly, the research that I found, the recidivism rates for committing new sex offenses were quite low. Now, these men talk about the fact that they don't have housing options upon release. So we have increased numbers of homelessness, and they can't find jobs because, and I think Christina talked about that a little bit, that employers' addresses are listed, and what employer wants to hire a sex offender? They are unable to have healthy relationships with women. I mean, those are the kind of fears that they're concerned about. Really, none of them spoke about having fears or being concerned about victimizing any further.
Christina, when you were looking at all these websites, were there any that stood out, several that seemed to be the most restrictive or contained the most information about these offenders?
I would say, in terms of containing the most information, I would have to go with Nebraska, and that is the one that provides an offender's work, school, home, temporary address, and the places that the offender frequents throughout the state. As far as standing out goes, California's website was very impressive, and they had a mapping tool that did everything from, and you could see parks, you could see schools, you could see everything. However, most of the time it's down and it's not working, so I don't know how effective it is when it doesn't work.
California, we're burdened with a lot of things right now. Certainly their prison system is has them stacked and packed, and you probably know about their death row.
Yeah, they're a bit overwhelmed.
And Quentin, because they don't do executions, they have 600 plus on death row, and the place actually happens to be on prime real estate, so you have some developers that want to actually take over the area instead of improve death row. That's kind of an interesting battle there. We'll have to see how that that turns out. For either one of you, in terms of the web registration idea itself, is that viable at all, Kelly?
Honestly, I don't. I'm seen as, you know, my opinion is probably in the minority, but I don't see the purpose when 80 to 90%, like I said, of these crimes are committed by persons living within the home. What does the registries, what does the proximity legislation, you know, how is that going to keep that from happening? I think the thing to think about is the fact that, and not to get off topic, but, you know, 70% of these offenders were victimized themselves. I think that we need to, in my opinion, we need to focus our efforts towards rehabilitating these people, treating victims of sexual offenses, because otherwise 70% of them will turn out to be perpetrators themselves, too.
Well, this legislation concerning the registration sites, like many things in criminal justice and in other areas, are really based on the worst-case scenarios, I imagine.
Absolutely, the most heinous crimes. And, you know, like I said in my paper, because of that, we have extreme laws based on extreme and rare cases. And, you know, the thing is they place those restrictions on all offenders, from my knowledge. And I don't know if, Christina, you found out differently than that, but I think I saw in your paper 60% of all of the states have to have them, all sex offenders, register regardless of the level of offense.
Even juveniles in a lot of the states, yes.
Yeah.
I do disagree slightly, and I think that there are some extreme things going on as far as what people have to report. But I do think that people have the right to know who's living next door, and I do think that people can better protect their children and themselves if they are informed. I don't know that reporting the places that I like to go in the state is necessary, you know, as an offender. And the fact that they're, most of the crimes are not stranger-related, that they are people that they know. I think I read you had one person you've interviewed say that he hadn't even shared the information with his family, so his family didn't know anything about it. So what keeps him from recidivating against a family member?
I guess well, once he was convicted, I understand that. You know, I guess I'll go back to the cliche, you know, that everybody would say in my position, you know, you don't know if the person living next to you is a murderer or a burglar. You know, that's the only thing. I don't understand why these offenders are targeted as much as they are, and I think it's based on untrue statistics. And you know, just because it's easy. I mean, I wanted to say there in no way do I condone this behavior, in no way, but it's easy to treat them like monsters.
Well, I think there's a lot of feelings that come along with being sexually abused or raped, and that can take a toll on somebody's life, that they're never the same. And like you said, a lot of sexual offenders were sexually abused or physically abused, and if we can protect children and adults alike from having their lives ripped away from them and changed completely, I think we need to do everything we possibly can to do that.
I agree. Well, I just don't know
that's my take
if ostracizing them is the way to go about it, I guess.
No, I don't agree with ostracizing them either.
Gina, in terms of the utility of these sites, I mean, we have registration sites now in 50 states and access from the public, so what would I do with these sites in terms of something would be useful for me? And in other words, I can go to my area and type in a zip code or my own address and then get data on people that live around me. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I know that in Ohio, and I don't know if it's all of the counties, but I know Cuyahoga County will email you when an offender moves within 1 mile of your home, mm-hmm. and just give you, you know, their address and the details of whether it was a felony or a misdemeanor or, you know, what they did. In general, you can search by name, address, last name, first name, zip code, city, your address, their address, all kinds of different things if you wanted to find out who is living around you as far as sex offenders go.
And then what pops up is, of course, the person's name, their address, where they work. And then I guess in most of these states or many of the states, they have a picture. Am I correct?
Yeah, 48 out of, I guess, 51 states, including the District of Columbia, have a picture. Full name, aliases are listed, full home address. 16 states list an alternate address of some type.
Do either of you know what percentage nationwide of the sex offenders that are required to register roughly, whether you have the data or not, roughly what percent of them would be women?
No, I don't know that.
I don't know that either, but I would assume that it's increasing with the number of cases coming out in the media.
Actually, Keith?
Yes, go ahead.
Huh? Actually, women are underreported. Cases concerning women we know are underreported, and there hasn't really been any empirical research done. However, a Canadian study determined that there is about 1 out of 25 convicted offenders was female.
Yeah, I thought it was about 5%.
Mm-hmm. And Sherry, tell us about what you found out and some of the writing you've done.
Well, as a contribution to an effort between myself and some colleagues, I wrote an article about female sexual predators. After the recent Deborah Lefebvre sentencing, some people, you know, blogged or proposed or whatever that there should be a female sexual predator act. And my position in the article I wrote was that, you know, we already have a Sexual Predator Act, and what we need to do is enforce it across the board and not just where males are concerned. Sentences for female offenders tend to be much lighter than sentences for male offenders. And the reason for a lot of that is that people just don't want to believe that women can offend, especially when it comes to juveniles. And so a lot of times, even when someone attempts to report a female offender, they're not taken seriously. Or in one case in Utah, an 8-year-old boy was molested by his 16-year-old babysitter, and they actually tried to bring charges against the boy. Because, you know, it's always the male that's responsible for this, you know. The prosecutor even indicated, well, you know, he was just sowing his oats early.
And we certainly look at cases of teachers, don't we, in these situations. And I don't know how long that list is now, but it's dozens, isn't it?
Yes, a lot of the offenders are women in authority positions over the males. One study showed that what was happening is that the women were sort of imitating an offense that actually had occurred for them in their lives. Some of these women actually believe that they're in love with these boys, and they'll have a sort of romantic affair with them. However, once they reach a certain age, they're no longer interested in the boy. And again, they're looking for a younger prospect because they can have that sort of leverage, I suppose, because of their maturity.
Kelly, since you work with offenders on the front line, what are the kind of restrictions that could be on them, if any? What kind of things do you think are useful? And then go ahead and elaborate some more on the things that are harmful to them based on what you found out in your study.
Well, obviously, they deserve consequences for the offenses that they commit, just like any other offender does. I think they should be treated like other offenders, who typically, you know, felony offenders who serve time in a prison setting or community-based correctional facility, which is the type of facility that I work at, and then be on probation or parole following their release. I honestly think that would be sufficient. In regards to I feel that, you know, it just keeps getting, you keep hearing more and more now, you know, there's the talk of the license plates, and in Defiance, Ohio, for example, because of the proximity legislation, there's nowhere within those city limits that an offender can live. These offenders, because of the proximity laws, and I don't know if we're discussing that at all tonight, but because of those laws, are getting, you know, forced out of areas, and, you know, into poverty-stricken and, you know, high-crime areas. It really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, the proximity legislation especially. They want them away from schools and parks, but, you know, like a gentleman spoke about in my focus group and also in another report that I had found, when those children come home from school, you know, he's at work while they're at school, and they come home, and, you know, he's around them anyways. I really don't see the point in those things, except just making the hurdles even harder for these people to overcome and, you know, become law-abiding, pro-social members of society.
We have another guest. Would you folks mind holding while I pick that person up?
I don't know.
Hello? Hello, this is Keith Haley. Who is this?
From the Constitution and torturing random people. Conservatives always say the great thing Reagan did was make
good
about
America. Yes. This is Keith Haley. Who is this?
Hello? Hello?
Keith, he's answering you. I can hear him.
Hello?
He's saying hello.
I know. I can hear him, too.
Okay, well, I can't hear you. Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, how you doing? I would like to make a comment. I've been listening to the show, and the social workers seem to have made some interesting points, but I got to say that I mostly disagree with what particularly Kelly is saying as far as reentry of these sexual predators in the society. And rather than go off, you know, citing a lot of statistics about this and that, the only, you know, thing that I question about these guys even being allowed out of jail ever, you know, particularly the ones who, you know, assaulted children, that, you know, how would you feel, or would you feel that same way if one of these predators, you know, took advantage, used or abused a relative of yours, say your child, your son, your daughter, your sister, something like that? How would you feel about having that same person get out of prison in a couple years, because the prisons are so full there, you know, they can't keep them in jail forever, you know, and they won't execute them, you know, and it's, you know, they say it's a sickness. Well, it's a sickness that can't be treated. So what do you do with them? But how would you like to have them move in next door to you, playing with, you know, right out there where you and your children, if you have any, play? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Folks, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, honestly, obviously, I care about my son. I love my son, and I would do anything to protect him. But from the statistics and research that I found, 80 to 90% of the time, it is a family member or someone that the victim knows who's offending. And because of that, because I'm aware of that, I would take those needed precautions. If there were any suspicion or anything such as that, then, you know, I would obviously follow up on that. But
what?
It's something important in my medicine.
What about it?
And the only other comment that I have to that is, you know, how would you feel if, you know, your child was the perpetrator, or grew up to be that because they were offended themselves? If that makes sense.
Christina, what you've looked at what all the states do, and what's a reasonable cut, or what's a reasonable group of type of offenses that you think should be required to register on these websites in order for public safety concerns, and then perhaps what ones are not? I don't think people in general know sort of the range of sex offenses. Maybe either one of you can help us with that.
There are a lot, anywhere from violent sexual predators down to gross sexual imposition, which could be, you know, it could be anything from a guy touched a girl's breast and she didn't like it and he's charged with it and he's now a registered sex offender. In terms of who should be registered, I think anybody who violates a child, I think anybody who is continuously noncompliant as far as the minimal registry requirements go, and anybody who is considered a violent predator, sexual predator, or a sexual predator in general. As far as the misdemeanor offenses, I think maybe, you know, after you've committed a certain number of misdemeanor offenses, then go ahead and register. Felonies, definitely. But there are just some, heard stories and have actually known people in my undergraduate years that are now registered sex offenders, and what they did, and it happened to be, I guess, possibly sleeping with the wrong person at the wrong time, and Well, you should probably know better. A lot of people don't.
That's an age issue, you mean?
I think so. I think it's an age issue, and I think it's, no offense, but I think it's a male thing, and men have a tendency to seek out things like that. And the one instance I referred to with the woman was absolutely intoxicated, and the kid's listed on a sex offender registry for the rest of his life because her boyfriend found out. Is basically the way that happened.
Kelly, what are some of the, I guess we could put it in the category of the saddest stories you've heard from some of these folks? I guess if they keep seeing doors closed in their face on a regular basis, some could probably get to the point of desperation, am I correct?
Absolutely. I mean, that. As you know, as I said, I'm a drug and alcohol counselor, so that's one of the main concerns for me. We have them, you know, basically because they leave and can't find employment or suitable housing, their families, maybe, you know, for a lot of the times their families would have to relocate to allow them to stay there, so they lose support from family. They're unable to develop healthy relationships a lot of the times because they don't know, you know, what to say, or they don't want to get other people involved, is the comments that I heard from the focus group that I held. Also, there was a story out of Maine where some gentleman was using the sex offender registries to target people for crimes. And you know, the backlash that the family has to face over these things also, I'm sure, is difficult.
I would assume, Sherry, in the studies that you've done, in terms of these female sexual predators, I would hope the ones that are teachers, that pretty much ends their teaching career. Am I correct? Or I think I've read some stories where they've gone from two or three different school districts, though.
Well, that's true. Yes, once they're convicted, they lose their teaching license. And they're not able to get that back, at least not under that name, identification. It is true that some of them do go from one district to another. It's not really sure. There's not any documentation as to why. Only speculate.
I would imagine the system tries to hide it, and it's probably not formally dealt with by the criminal justice system, and they try to shunt them off to some other place. Is that probably what happens?
Well, that could be the case in a way, because, well, like I said, people don't want to believe that females offend. And it has to be a fairly serious and ongoing offense before anyone will recognize it as an offense.
Well, Kelly, let me ask you this, and I'll ask Christina and Sherry both also. If you were redoing the legislation on this, or relative to sex offenders, what would be two or three things that we would need in revised legislation here in the state or any other state that would be more amenable to the needs of both the community and the sex offenders? What do you think that would be?
Well, I would say, first of all, I agree that the low-risk offenders, the misdemeanor offenses, I don't believe that there needs to be. I don't believe that they should have to register. In fact, when we treat low-risk offenders like high-risk offenders, we end up seeing higher rates of recidivism, at least in the treatment world.
For those that are listening that really don't know what that is, I mean, without getting graphic, what are we talking about in terms of the lowest risk offender that has to register? What do they do?
Well, for example, one that I am dealing with had a relationship when he was 18 with a 15-year-old, and he has to register.
Your typical, what I used to see in police work a long time ago in the Ice Age, your typical flasher case, is that one of these ones that they have to register also?
I'm not sure if Christina knows that. I'm not sure of that exactly.
I believe that varies from state to state. I believe some states are extremely strict, and then, yes, they would have to, and other ones are more lax and who have to, and I think it varies. That's up to the state to decide.
Well, Kelly, what would be a couple other things that you think is needed in revised legislation then?
Mandatory treatment for these offenders. I think that we really do need to focus on and find treatment that works for these types of offenders. Because, like I said, the majority of them have been offended themselves, and, you know, we need to figure out how to stop that cycle.
Now, generally or specifically, what treatment does work that you know of? I know one of the things I've heard of in prison, they're using, some of the counselors are using a polygraph to actually check the veracity of the statements they make, like in their treatment groups, am I correct?
Yeah, I've heard of that, and you know, that's really outside of my scope. I don't know that for certain. I don't actually conduct the sex offender groups at my facility, but one thing, when these offenders recidivate, like I said, they typically recidivate on non-sexual offenses. So I think that the treatment needs to focus, or these therapists need to know about criminality in general. Sexual abuse recovery groups also probably need to become more prevalent.
Now, some of them, in terms of housing, I know in some other states, and I believe here in Ohio, some are actually housed together in a community. Am I correct?
I don't know about that, but I believe it's coming to that point.
I think it happens. I don't think it's intentional. I think there's only certain places people can go, and they all end up in the same area.
I see. Okay, so they sort of end up together. I thought I'd heard here in the state parole system where they were actually contracting with housing where they could all be together, and they're under super. I don't know if it's 24 hours, but. They work out of these, live and work out of these residences.
Well, and they might be housed in halfway houses that take sex offenders.
I wonder what, to be a probation officer, parole officer, supervising people in this category must present some challenges, I imagine, right?
I'm sure.
What's the chance of, Do some of these people decide to become, they're so desperate that they even want to go back to prison, as we hear about in other situations?
In the focus group that I conducted, that statement was made.
Was it?
Why don't they just, I think he said, I wish they would just give me a life sentence versus having to go through.
I've said something very similar myself. If they're so dangerous and they need this list of restrictions and they can't go anywhere, can't live various places and can't work in various capacities, and people that find out that they have this record often fire them, I suppose, prison may be, if they're that dangerous, why are they out of prison? When, in fact, they probably aren't, you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same question I have.
Maggie, who's in the kitchen? Why are you in the kitchen? I already told you to carry your ass to bed. Now you went in there and got some more juice. It is not the same.
Does he realize we can still hear him?
I just shut that one off. One of the very early shows, which I think Sherry probably knows about, one of our fine gentlemen who does work in juvenile corrections. He came off the show. He was doing a presentation about surveillance cameras and the new version of flying surveillance cameras. And when he clicked off, we got
he was ordering pizza.
What, like a good pizza too? I mean, that's one of the features of Blog Talk Radio, but it's still a miracle technology that we can do this with. Well, folks, we're coming closer to the end. What would you like to get out that I'm not talking about?
Well, I have a comment, and perhaps you ladies aren't going to like me for this, and I can understand your therapist or you've been working with people in a therapy situation, which hasn't been my situation entirely. I'm a former police officer, but I did work at a treatment facility for juvenile. Well, part of it was male juvenile sex offenders, and I did work that unit sometimes. And I hear from you a lot of sympathy for these guys, and I guess that's just something I don't have much of. But I hear a minimizing of some of their offenses. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, the old adage, 18 will get you 20. And, you know, as far as touching her bottom, and she did, that's not gross sex. It may be sexual imposition, it's not gross sexual imposition. And, you know, even if it's marked as a misdemeanor, it's still an offense. And it doesn't minimize it just being a misdemeanor. And I just like to point that out. I understand, you know, you work closely with these people and you hear their personal stories and you develop some empathy for them. And I suppose if I was in your position, I would too. And they are very good at, I think some of these people are very good at manipulating feelings. And I just kind of wanted to make that point that, you know, that they wouldn't be in the position they're in if there hadn't been an offense. And I don't know how hard-lined we should be with them. I can't say that I agree totally with all of the restrictions and different things that are placed on them, but I don't think we can just, you know, minimize whatever their offense is. And I suppose you won't be happy with me for saying that, but
I'm sorry. I do want to make it very clear that I am not in any way attempting to minimize. Or am I? Do I feel like I'm being manipulated? I like you said. I mean, I'm on the treatment side. I'm looking at recidivism. And as I said in the beginning, I don't. And in any way, do I condone their behaviors? I'm just looking at how. I know, like I said, that I have probably, in many people's opinion, an extreme side to this. But in my opinion, we have to do something different. What we're doing right now is not working.
And Kelly, you have a perspective that virtually all of us don't have, because you see these folks and you've actually talked to them. And to most of us, it's just the story. It does seem sort of odd, though, that even one of these minor sexual offenses that a person has to register and we can find out where they live and other information and see their picture, but someone who's a murderer. I was thinking about that today as I was thinking about our show, the guy that murdered a friend of mine in a robbery in Cincinnati back in the 1970s, who got life in prison, is now out and has been out for, I guess, 7 or 8 years. I was shocked by that, and nobody knows where he lives.
That's a good point.
He's a dangerous armed robber, and he had been convicted of armed robbery before, and it took 4 years to catch him. He committed the crime in Cincinnati in 77, I believe, and wasn't caught until 4 years later in New York City. So, whoever said we were consistent in criminal justice, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, Keith, we just get one of those blind British police officers to come over and find it for us.
That's a whole other story, isn't it? In order to be fair, Britain's going to be hiring blind police officers so they don't approach the cases with any kind of prejudice. Some people, they read that story and believed it, and I hope that's a joke. But
I think it was written as a joke, yeah.
Well, folks, we're near the end, and I want to thank you very much for this conversation. And
You know, perhaps we can come back and talk more on this in some later show, because there's so many facets to this that I know we haven't covered. But I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight. And I see Audrey over there waving her hands, as she usually does, to let me know it's time to sign off. So, folks, I want to say goodnight, and hope to talk with you soon again. We'll be seeing you again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Keith.
Right, good night.
And good night, ladies.
Again, don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was again. Don't know where,